Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Season 7, Episode 3 of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, and we are on Season 7 now, where we are talking about old school bodybuilding, and today our guest is Rick Valente, and Rick was a mainstay at Gold's Gym ever since the early 1980s. So we are going to have Rick on the show and talk about some of the stories of Gold's Gym and its heyday. I met with Rick when I was out in California for Memorial Day weekend, and I was able to talk to him then and went out to lunch with him. He's a really great guy, very personable. And, of course, Rick is famous for doing the body shaping show on ESPN, which ran for about 10 years in the 1990s. And I think they actually ran it for 16 years, but he filmed it for 10 years. So Rick's going to tell us all about that, as well as how he got started in bodybuilding and then some of the guys he met when he was training at Gold's Gym and some of the stories. So that's going to be a great conversation. All right, I want to mention right off the bat, we are brought to you by Redcon One. Everybody wants to be a champion. Everyone wants to be the best. And at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout, Total War, is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then you can fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and carb sources coming from sweet potatoes and oats. And it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com. and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And if you go on Redcon One, also check out their MRE bars, which they are coming out with new flavors all the time. So check that out. And if you order anything on redcon1.com, enter the discount code LEGENDS to let Aaron Singerman and Redcon One know that you are listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And you'll also get a 15% discount off your order. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements to the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner Vintage Burn. This is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner. Or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe title in 2012. And they're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, the 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion, who is now gearing up for the 2018 Classic Physique Olympia. And he's also the 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. And Old School Labs also sponsors 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Benoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So when you go to oldschoollabs.com, use the discount code LEGENDS12, and you will get a 12% discount off your order on any Old School Labs that you order. Or you can go to Amazon.com and order the supplements from there also. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, I had a great week this week because I had my interview with Lee Labrada on Wednesday, so that was very exciting. I know Lee is very busy. He runs Labrada Nutrition, and he doesn't have a lot of time. So it took a while to get my interview with Lee, so I was very excited to finally talk to him. But he was professional and courteous as always. He's always been a very professional bodybuilder and a professional businessman. And I told him that at the end of our interview, you know, he used to advertise his courses as Mass with Class, and he's lived his life like that. He's been a great family man. Him and his wife are going to celebrate, let's see, they got married in 1986, so 96, 06, 16, their 32nd anniversary next week, I think, or well, maybe it was this week. So he's been married for 32 years to his lovely wife, Robin, and his son, Hunter, is now getting ready for the Nationals, and I think he's probably going to get his pro card there, so we talked a little bit about that. But our main focus was to talk about Lee's career in bodybuilding, and he had an amazing 10-year career as a professional. So we talked about all the Mr. Olympia competitions that he entered. So this will be part of the Bodybuilding Legends video series that we do. And it's going to be a great video because it's going to have all the clips of the Mr. Olympia competitions that Lee was in. So be sure to check that out. It should be up probably within another month or so. I just put up the John Torelli interview this week. And that was part one of our John Torelli video interview. So we had a lot of clips of John competing in the NABBA universe. And I also have clips of him competing in the Best in Australia contest, which was in 1980. And that was the day that the Mr. Olympia was held in Australia, the 1980 Mr. Olympia, which was one of the most infamous Mr. Olympias, one of the most controversial Mr. Olympias ever. So John was right there on stage with those guys. He wasn't in the Mr. Olympia, but he competed in the Best of Australia contest, which was right before the Mr. Olympia. And I think John was only about 21 years old when that contest took place. So he had some really good thoughts on his opinion of the Mr. Olympia because he was right backstage with all the bodybuilders. You got to pump up with them while they were pumping up. So it was really a great experience for John. It's a really, really cool video interview, and you want to check that out. That's on the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com website, and it's right up there along with our latest podcast with Larry Jackson. And I'm still working on some other interviews. We are hoping to get Tom Platz one of these days. It was Tom's birthday the other day, so happy birthday to Tom. In fact, this was a great week for birthdays in the bodybuilding world. Matt Mendenhall just had his birthday this week, and Lance Dreher, who we've had on the show, Mr. Universe, and Lance was a great idol of mine growing up in the Chicago area. His birthday was also this week, and Tom Platz's birthday was this week. Tom turned, I believe, 63 years old. He was born in 1955, so congratulations and happy birthday to all those guys. Hope everybody's doing well and they're all happy and healthy. We did get some emails this week. I will read those to you now. One of them was from Scott Barron. Scott, of course, is a big listener of the show. And Scott got interviewed this week by Ron Harris on the Ronline Report, which is on MuscularDevelopment.com. And Scott talked about back in 1992, I think it was, at the Arnold Classic, Scott won the drawing to go to California and work out with Arnold and hang out with Arnold for a day and also go on his movie set. So that was amazing, and I think Scott was only, I think he was only 19 or 20 years old. He was really young at the time. So he's told that story before. I think he wrote an article about it for Muscle Mag, and Ron Harris had him on the Ronline Report on MuscularDevelopment.com, and Scott told the whole story, so that was really cool to hear. And Scott gave us a shout-out. He gave me and Bodybuilding Legend Show a shout-out at the end and said how much he enjoys listening to the show. He sent me an email and he said, John, true to my word, I mentioned you by name and about the Bodybuilding Legends show at the conclusion of my 60-minute interview with Ron Harris today. The link should become available sometime tomorrow. Overall, the interview went extremely well. Yeah, it was a really good interview, and that is on MuscularDevelopment.com, so if anybody wants to listen to it. I also got an email this week, and he says, hi, John, I recently purchased your book, The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. It's a great book, and you had me hanging off every word. It's mostly geared to competition dieting. Is there any advice you can give for the off-season dieting? I'm 235 at the moment, but I don't look nowhere as big as you were, although I'm quite bulky. I was hoping to put some mass on for the next few months and then start cutting down using ideas from the book. I always train 4 days a week at the moment, chest and tries, back and shoulders, and legs on their own. Being natural, I struggle with energy training much more. I'm 29 years old now. Thanks, John. Yes. I emailed Rich back, and I told him that I could help him with off-season training as well as pre-contest training. So if anyone's interested in me setting up a training program or a diet program, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, or if you wanted to email me through the website, you can go on our website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and the email address on there is john@bodybuildinglegendshow.com. So just email me there, and I'd be glad to help you guys out. As I mentioned, I have that new website called dadbodtoripbod.com, and we have a questionnaire on there, and you just fill it out for either a training or diet program, and I will be able to help you out. So I'd be glad to help anybody out that's interested in that. We did get a lot of comments also on the John Torelli interview, which is on YouTube. So Guy Graham said, fantastic interview as always, John. John Torelli is a famous bodybuilder with great shape who didn't look out of place next to Lee Haney, 8-time Mr. Olympia. I saw him on video in maybe a Mr. World getting fifth, and he was so robbed, he was easily in the top three, and it had the famous IFBB pros in the top three. Not being from America was always a disadvantage to him. John judged me at a junior Oceania contest in the early 90s, and I was as excited about that as competing in the show. This series is hands down the best in bodybuilding sports media. Wow, thank you very much, Guy. Yes, I know which contest Guy is talking about also. That was the 1986 IFBB Pro Mr. World Contest, or the Pro World Championships that John was in, John Torelli was in. And that was the one that Rich Gaspari won, and Mike Christian was second. And I think Frank Richards was third, and David Hawk was fourth, and John got fifth. And he was in great shape for that contest. So I could see where Guy is coming from. I could have seen John placing a little bit higher in that also. So that will be in part two of our video interview, where we'll talk about that Pro World Contest, as well as when John competed in the 1986 Mr. Olympia, which was in Columbus, Ohio. And that will be in part two of the video interview. And that video interview will be up probably in another week or two. So stay tuned to the bodybuildinglegendshow.com for that second part, or it will be on YouTube. But like I said, guys, the best way is go on bodybuildinglegendshow.com and fill out the email address at the bottom, and then you'll be on my mailing list. And then when I send out my weekly newsletter about the Bodybuilding Legend Show and all the new podcasts we've got coming up, any new articles or any new video interviews, you'll be appraised of that right away with the newsletter. So do that if you're interested in what's coming up on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com. Drew Ray said, finally, you came out with a video. I love your interviews, and your videos are so underrated. I always look forward to watching your video, and I just want to say keep up all the great work. Yeah, Drew, when I looked, the last interview we had up was Eddie Robinson, part one, and that was actually last year. So it's already now July, so we're already 6 months into the new year, 2018, and I didn't even have a video up yet. So I'm glad I was able to put this one up with John Torelli. And like I said, part two will be coming up, and then right after that, we'll have Lee Labrada coming up. So we got some good video interviews coming up. Chris Widener said, well done. Excellent production value to go with you and your guest. I hope the word spreads quickly about your video interviews. You deserve it. All the best. And RT says, John Torelli has a great personality. I always thought he was from the East Coast and not Australia. Well, actually, John did live in the East Coast. He lived in New York when he moved from Australia to the United States, but he's back in Australia now. So thank you to everybody who gave a comment on YouTube, and thank you for the emails that you sent out to me in regards to the other stuff that's on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com. I also want to mention that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, go see the expert at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number. They are out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939. Or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com. And their office number again is 813-922-8939. You will get a free consultation if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And they will also give you a 20% discount off your first order. So that is a great deal. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Rick Valente. Talk about the old days of bodybuilding at Gold's Gym. You're really going to enjoy this interview. Here you go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest this week, Mr. Rick Valente. Rick was one of the mainstays at Gold's Gym since the 1980s, and he's probably best known for being the host of Body Shaping on ESPN, which ran for, I believe, 15 years. But Rick was there in the very old days, the old school days of bodybuilding at Gold's when it was really happening. So we're going to talk about some old school stories. Rick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Listen,
John, I'll tell you what, I feel so blessed. And if you hear noise in the background, that's the house is upside down because it's being worked on.
Right.
But, you know, there's all kinds of saws and stuff going on. But listen, I feel so blessed that I had the opportunity to be at Gold's Gym in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And it was one room, and it was mostly all competitive bodybuilders.
Yeah, yeah.
So the energy, you can't replace that energy. I mean, you walk in and you have the Menzner brothers over here doing one set to failure. Mm-hmm. You got Tom Platz over at the squat rack squatting till he pukes. You got the Barbarian brothers doing reverse grip 500-pound bench press. I mean, I could go on and on. Casey Vieter over here. You got Lyle Alzado over there. I mean, it was just the hair on the back of your neck, John, when you walked in would just stand up because the competitive juices were so powerful. And back then, you know, we had a lot of guys who were around the same caliber. So you had bodies like Mike Christian, Charles Glass, Bob Paris. I mean, I can't even name all the guys that were there because I know I'm going to leave some out. But it was truly an amazing time in bodybuilding and at Gold's Gym.
Yeah, I saw you out there when I was out there for Memorial Day weekend. And that's like three buildings now. Gold's is like three big rooms. And I still get excited going in there because it's still got a lot of energy. But I can't imagine going back in the 1980s where it was all one room and all those guys were stuffed into one room all training like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have Samir Banu getting ready for the Olympia. I mean,
right.
Gunnar Rosbo was over there. I mean, he was thick. And everybody was strong as a bull. You know, crewing 100 dumbbells. Everybody was benching 405. That was nothing.
Yeah.
You know, guys were benching 500. I mean, it was a great time. I feel grateful and blessed that I had the experience to do that. You know, it was amazing because when you look at the bodies then, John, they're completely different than where they are now.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody talks about that. But the reality is most of the guys back in the 80s and 90s had really small waist, which really makes the physique look beautiful and pleasing to the eye.
Yeah.
And then I think, and this is only my opinion, after Lee Haney and Ronnie took it to the next level, but he still looked amazing.
Yeah.
And Dorian Yates and those guys, right? But after that, then I honestly think it was the new drugs they were using, whatever it was. They got thicker and blockier, and then the organs started to grow to where the bellies started to really blow up.
Talked about that on the show many times about how after Haney, that was the last of the golden era, really.
Right. And I feel sorry for the young kids because when we were young kids, we looked at, you know, Steve Reeves, Bill Pearl, I mean, Arnold, Frank Zane, and we really wanted to look like that. If the kids today look at some of those guys and with the bellies and stuff and say, you know, I want to look like that. I don't believe it.
No. Well, you know, it's weird because I don't know if you saw this post I posted on my Facebook. A couple of weeks ago, they had the Junior Nationals in Chicago, which always was a huge show. I remember when I was competing in the 80s, I did the Junior Nationals a couple of times. And every weight class was stacked. I mean, there was 30, 40 guys in the class.
Yeah.
They had the middleweight class. They had two guys up there. So I'm like, well, what is this? Is this like the final two? And I posted on there. I go, was there only two guys in here? And they go, yeah, there's just two guys. I go, are you kidding me? The Junior Nationals, there's two guys in the middleweight class? That was unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
That means that nobody wants to be a bodybuilder anymore.
Yeah, sad.
Yeah.
You know, because bodybuilding gave me everything I have in my life. I mean, I have everything to thank for bodybuilding. The thing is, you know, when you're young and you have that passion, it's a burning fire in your belly and you're fearless. I moved across the country with $400 in my pocket. I didn't care. I had to be at Gold's Gym Venice. That's where it was happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no internet back then. You know, John.
Right.
If you wanted to be on covers of the magazines, and if you wanted to be in bodybuilding, and you wanted to be around Joe Weider, you had to be at Gold's Venice.
Right. Well, Rick, let's talk about how you got into bodybuilding. What age were you, and where did you grow up, and,
you know,
and what made you decide to come out to California?
I was really young. Taking it way back to what gave me the desire to start building was looking at guys like Arnold, Robbie Robinson, House. Alec, you know, all those guys.
Yeah.
When I was probably 10 or 12, I sent away for the Charles Atlas little booklet that would come. I don't know if you remember. You're probably too
young. Yeah, I remember that.
It was a pencil sketch of doing dips, pull-ups, different types of push-ups. And that's what got me started.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout school, I played a little football, wrestled, and started taking karate. My first passion was Bruce Lee.
Yeah,
I created a vision board before there was, we even knew the term vision board.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my father had a cool man cave in the basement, and he let me have a corner of it. And I the whole wall, I did a Bruce Lee and all these karate guys, right?
Yeah.
Then the more I started working out, I just started getting more into the bodybuilding thing. So I had literally put the bodybuilding pictures over the karate pictures. And I have pictures of it, which is really, it's fun to look back on. But yeah.
Where did you grow up? Were you in New York?
I was in a small town outside of New Haven, Connecticut, called Ansonia, Connecticut.
Yeah. Okay. East Coast.
Yes. And I created a little corner where I put an eye hook in the ceiling. I put a rope through it, and I created a tricep pushdown machine, right?
Right.
Yeah, I had a block of wood. You know, I mean, it was just
really?
Yeah, when you're passionate about something, you will do whatever it takes.
Yeah, yeah.
To work out and get better at it.
When did you do your first bodybuilding show?
You know, it's funny. After I graduated high school, the neighborhood, listen, Ansonia is a beautiful place, and there's a lot of great people there, but unfortunately, I hung around with a crew that was doing a lot of bad stuff, drugs, fucking around. We were doing bad stuff.
Right.
So when I graduated high school, I knew there had to be more to life than this. So I met a guy at the Ansonia YMCA, Bob Levine. He gave me his business card. He was only in town managing a Chevrolet dealership, Dworkin Chevrolet. And he said, if you ever want to get out of here, give me a call because I'm moving back to Florida. And so, you know, like 6 months, a year went by, and then a few of my friends OD'd on drugs, got killed,
wow,
crazy shit. So I called him up one day, and I just said, is that offer still up? He said, absolutely, come on down. So I moved from Ansonia, Connecticut, Florida, and it was an amazing 3 years there. I had a great time there. Florida was great. They had Mike Parsons. I don't know if you remember him. He was a bodybuilder down there. Tim Belknap was hanging around down there.
Oh, yeah, I know Tim, yeah.
But in Connecticut, you must remember Ronnie Magnum, Joe Yeslick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ronnie was amazing back then.
He was. He was a great bodybuilder. Yeah. What part of Florida did you move to, Rick?
Oh, I moved to Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, Fort Lauderdale. Okay, cool.
Yep. I lived on the Strip, and it was a crazy time because that's when spring break.
Yeah, I remember that.
No, seriously, I was working at a club called Summers.
Uh-huh.
And I worked the door there. We had 15 bouncers because it was over 10,000 square feet. It was a huge club. And it was one of the hottest clubs on the Strip. So we had an amazing time. I mean, you know, you have all these college kids coming down, and all they want to do is have fun. We had all kinds of wet T-shirt contests and this and that. But anyways, Alan and Susan, who owned the club, said, you know, we're going to do a bodybuilding contest.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have NPC guys come in and judge it. And they did. And so all my bouncer friends kept saying, get in it. And I was like, I wasn't really feeling confident enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel I was complete. My legs were weak. My calves were small. I didn't think I was ready to get on stage. But the closer it got to the show, they kept edging me on and go, go, go. So I jumped on stage, and thank God I did. I won that show, and
really?
That lit the fire to enter the Golden Glades, the Gold Coast, and Mr. Florida.
What year was that, Rick, that you had that contest at Fort Lauderdale?
That was 1980-81.
Wow. That's crazy, too, because I'm from Chicago, and I don't remember what year it was, but I was like a kid. I don't even know if I was in high school. And my family took a trip down to Fort Lauderdale, and we walked down the Strip when it was spring break. And I don't think my parents knew what we were headed for. And it was crazy. It was like people were just driving down the street real slow and vans full of chicks. It was like, I felt like I was in a different world. It was unbelievable.
Can you imagine how I felt coming from a small
place? Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm working the door of the hottest club.
Oh, my God. You would have a great time.
And my roommate, Bob Levine, was the bartender.
Really? Okay.
So, it was – I can't even tell you how much fun we had. But, you know, the crazy thing was we had a great work ethic back east. We weren't afraid to work. So I had two or three jobs. I was a lifeguard cabana boy at the Gulf Ocean Mile Hotel. During the day, I played lifeguard, Cabana Boy. Then at night, I'd work the club.
Yeah.
I also had a job. Bill Daddio gave me a job at one of his gyms.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm always going to be grateful for those guys. They gave me a lot of opportunity. And it just was 3 years probably of the most fun I've had in a long, long time as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. So when did you move to California?
I moved to California in 82. 82, okay. 83, yeah. And I was really lucky because I didn't know anybody. I went into Gold's Gym, and the owners there treated me like family. I'll always be grateful to Tim, Ed, Pete Kromkowski. You know the owners of Gold's back then.
Yeah, Tim Kimber and Pete Kromkowski.
That's right.
Exactly
right. And in fact, Ed Connors let me crash in his pad for a weekend.
Wow.
And from there, I went to this hotel where Joe Bucci was working.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little room, and from there I went to a garage, then I went to a single. I had no money.
Yeah.
I didn't care. You know, John, it's crazy. When you're so passionate about something,
yeah,
you're fearless. You don't care. You just want to be in that sweet spot. And for me, Gold's Gym, I owe everything to Gold's Gym because Derek Barton was working. They had an entertainment division then. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. If you're doing a commercial or a movie and you need some good bodies, I mean, you'd call Gold's Gym, right?
Right.
So Derek Bart, he got me so many commercials. I mean, I commercials. He got me the Body Shaping Show. He got me Van Halen album cover.
Yeah.
I could go on and on. And then Gold's would use me to go do talk shows and put me on covers of their supplements. And I did their clothing line. I mean,
wow.
It was one hand washed the other. You know, we loved and respected each other, and I would do whatever I could for the gym, and they would do whatever they could to get me more work.
So when you went into Gold's, that was, what, 82, you said. So what was that like the first time you walked in? Tell me that story.
I was excited and scared shit because, like I said, you had these monsters in there that were just training like animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, what was amazing, John, is I went from putting pictures on a wall of these bodybuilders and then becoming friends with them and working out with them.
Yeah, that would be surreal.
Oh, I trained with Tom Platz, Robbie Robinson, all these guys. It was just, I remember doing a set of calves with Mike Menzner, and we would go to failure, and then he taught me to squat down like you're doing a squat and then continue to flex your calves.
Oh,
they would burn and lock up. I mean, I couldn't walk for 2 days.
Yeah.
I thought it was a beautiful thing. I mean, I miss Mike because he was a special guy.
Yeah.
And as far as training, there's only a few guys that I have ever trained with. Mike Quinn was one of them, too.
Mm-hmm.
But Tom Platz would take it to a level that very few people go to.
Right.
Because it's all in the mind. Once you did, like when you would spot Tom, and he would get a bunch of different people every now and then to jump in with him, and he would crucify you. Because to spot Tom Platz, like let's say he was doing leg extensions.
Okay.
When he got to the top, he would hold it and want you to push down and give him a negative. And
you
would think, okay, I'll do one or two. He would have you do 15.
Holy
By
shit.
The time your set came, your triceps were blown out and smoking. And I mean, it was just, I cherish those memories because, I mean, Tom took it to a level where he would do 35, 40 reps with 315.
Wow.
And literally get off the squat rack, lay down, and just start hyperventilating, put a towel over his face, get up and puke in the fucking trash can, and then go and do another set. People don't treat like that anymore.
And when you say squats, I seen Tom squat. I mean, I didn't see him in person, but I've seen videos and pictures of him. He goes all the way down, all the way down.
No
it's
question,
all legs.
John. His ass hit his ankles every
time.
And Tom had probably the best leg. And you have to remember, back then, his legs were striated, lined, separated.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a picture of Tom on the beach in the gym, and he's doing some kind of pose, and his legs aren't even flexed. It bothers me that picture's there because he had so many incredible pictures where we would go in the back, you know, where the garage door is, where the mirror looks great and the lighting is perfect back there.
Yeah, yeah.
He would drop his pants and his legs, he'd hit leg poses, and there'd be a group of us just going, holy shit. I mean, right. I have never seen anything like it since.
Right.
And I saw some guys the other day, you know, it's funny we're talking about this, because just I think yesterday there were about a half dozen pro bodybuilders there. And that's a lot for Golds Now.
Yeah.
And a few of them were posing, and I don't understand what happened to the side chest shot. Well, when did somebody decide I'm gonna bend down and bring my shoulder into my chest and try and flex my intercostals? Listen, there's only one guy that I've seen in all these years who could do a side chest shot and show his intercostals. That was Robbie Robinson.
Right.
And I think all these guys, I think, are trying to duplicate that, but they don't. When we listen, Arnold had an incredible side chest shot.
Yeah,
that's how you hit the side chest shot.
Right, right.
I don't understand. And I was watching them doing the back double bicep, and they were leaning over too much. And I wanted to say, dude, let me help you, but I didn't want to, you know, rain on their parade. A lot of them, why when they hit the back double bicep now, do they squeeze their ass and make their legs bow-legged? And it doesn't
look exactly
pleasing.
They always put that knee out to the side, and it looks so weird. It's just put your leg back and flex your calf. I don't understand it either.
You want to see a great back double bicep? Look at Robbie's, Arnold, Samir Banute, Barry Bemei,
Christian.
I mean, Lee Haney.
Yeah.
Ronnie Coleman. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It goes on and on. But to me, we've lost, I don't know how, and I don't know how the judges don't pull these guys aside and say, listen, that's not how to hit the side chest shot.
Right, right. Nobody hits it right anymore. Nobody.
No. And when you do your back double bicep, don't look like you're squeezing a dollar in your ass and your legs are all bow-legged. What are you doing?
They're so worried about their glutes now, you know?
Yeah, but it's not aesthetically pleasing.
No, not at all.
We've lost the art of bodybuilding.
Absolutely, yeah. I just talked to Lee Labrada the other day, and we were talking about that, about how, you know, the aesthetics and the shape is so important. And I congratulated him because I said, you know, it took courage on your part to stick to your guns and not overdevelop your physique and just keep the aesthetics, keep the shape, especially when he was a pro and he was in the Mr. Olympia. I'm sure he was getting pressure. You know, you got to get bigger, you got to get bigger. And he's like, nope, he knew that. You can only add so much size to your physique you ruin the lines and ruin the aesthetics.
And Lee had a beautiful body and was a class act.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Speaking of Facebook, I saw a guy on, a classic physique guy, and he's from Florida, and he was doing a side chest. He was doing it all screwed up, like you said. And he had a thick chest, and I'm like, man, if this guy did the pose right, he would look incredible in that pose. Crouching down, and he totally ruined his physique. You know, he totally ruined the impressiveness of what that pose could have been.
Yeah, I will never understand how the judges allowed this to go on. I just don't get it. And it's you know, this thing, when I look at the women bodybuilders too, and especially a lot of the fitness shows, why do the girls, I mean, stick their butt out like that? I just don't get it.
Right.
I don't understand it. It doesn't look aesthetically pleasing. It looks like you've got a problem.
I know. Well, you know what it is? I don't think a lot of these competitors think for themselves. They're just copying what everybody else is doing.
Exactly.
And maybe they don't have any history of the sport. They don't see any of the old pictures. They don't see any of the bodybuilders from the 70s or 80s. And they don't know how it should be done.
You hit it right on the head, John. You're absolutely right. A lot of these guys don't know any of the history. And see, that's where we were different. When I went there, I gave all the old timers respect because they paved the way. So Joe Gold, Zabo, I mean, you name it. I gave him respect. Eddie Giuliani, I love Eddie.
Yeah.
Now today, I'm the old guy. I'm 60 years old.
Right.
They walk right by me. They don't even know who I am. I'm okay with that. Listen, I know I didn't win a bunch of pro shows, but a lot of people don't understand. My pec, I tore my pec in half. I blew it up. Okay. And that ended my bodybuilding career.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I learned a lot when I tore my pec about life, about everything, because the guy who did all the cutting for the Raiders, Lyle Elzado, hooked me up with the surgeon.
Okay.
And he had a young intern with him. They did the surgery. I was in the recovery room. The young intern comes in first. He goes to me, I'm just waking up. I'm, you know, I'm delirious, right? He goes, man, that was the worst pec tear I've ever seen. And he walks out. Yeah, he walks out. I'm suicidal. I'm like, what the fuck? the old timer comes in and he says, you're a young, healthy guy. You're going to be just fine. Now, listen, I understood then that when someone's going through adversity, what you say to them is so powerful.
Absolutely.
So try to be as positive as you can. And I do that now when a lot of young kids come up to me because they tore their pec and they're all depressed. I say, listen, you're going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. You will learn how to work around it because everybody's injury is a little different. And you have to learn how to work around it. You will never be the same. And mm-hmm. John, it's kind of like when you have a car and you bent the frame.
Yeah.
You can straighten it out. But the gait is never the same. And ever since I tore my pec, I've had neck issues. Because when they sewed it back together, it was like sewing hamburger meat back together. Because the center of the pec blew in half. It blew up.
Mm. Wow, and that's crazy.
Yeah, it was my fault. You know, and I tell all these young guys today, cycle your training.
Yeah.
Can't train heavy all the time. You're going to get hurt. I love Ronnie Coleman, but look what happened to Ronnie Coleman.
I know. How did you do it, Rick? Were you bench pressing?
Here's what happened. Joe Pitka was shooting a Nike commercial. We were doing it with Bo Jackson. It was that commercial when you'd say Bo Knows, and they would have the hockey players and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We said Bo Knows weights, and we were at the weight pen. And in between takes, all the local guys were benching 315 for reps. Mm-hmm. And I always had a good bench press because of my triceps.
Yeah, huge so triceps. Yeah.
Yeah, I would get down there and do 8 to 10 reps with 405. I think what I did is I damaged it then.
Uh-huh.
Then I went into May Malika's Tournament of Champions. I placed like second or third, and I was depressed. And I went in the gym like 2 days later, and I was really strong. Of course, well, you know, when you eat a lot after you've been dieting, you're strong as bull, right?
Right.
I got a single with a 500, and I tried to go a little heavier. And when you take the heavy weight off a rack, your pecs flexed. Well, the right one locked. As I started to come down, the right one just ripped in half. You could hear it. Just
wow.
Ripped.
Oof. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a time in my life that was really challenging. What my whole life, the passion I had my whole life was bodybuilding. And then all of a sudden, just like that, it's over.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot, John, about adversity introduces you to you. And you really learn what you're made of because I was living alone in a single apartment. I had to sleep in a lawn chair because the stitches back then, they kept you in a sling for 8 to 10 weeks, which was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was on all kind of meds, and I said, I got to get out of the house. So I walked down to the Rose Cafe, and who comes walking out but Joe Gold? And this is just when Joe Gold was dealing with his hip issues, and he had a walker.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees me, and he goes, what the fuck did you do? Joe, I tore my pec. He goes, you stupid fuck, you'll never be the same.
And,
you know, I was so pissed at him for the longest time, but he was right.
Yeah.
And listen, what I learned is you can work around any injury. You just have to stay positive.
Yeah.
And John, after that, I went from doing the bodybuilding stuff. All of a sudden, I lost 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
A year later, I auditioned for the Body Shaping Show. I got the Body Shaping Show, and that changed my life. When you're on TV twice a day for the first 5 years,
yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Tell me how you got that show and what happened with that.
You know, that show was pretty crazy, and the way I got it was pretty crazy, too. I mean, I was living with a female bodybuilder.
Okay.
She was up and coming and beautiful and had an amazing body. I don't want to drop any names. I don't want to cause any problems. But
okay. They
threw a random test on us, drug test.
Uh-huh.
So, listen, the show was like 5 days away, and I figured the only way to get through this is to throw in – I threw in a girl who looked just like her because the doctor didn't know anything about the sport, and it worked like a charm. But, John, of course, there's always jealous, vindictive people out there. One of the top female bodybuilders caught wind of it and hired an attorney, tracked down the girl, scared the shit out of her. She confessed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a mess.
So they did random drug testing, and you sent a girl that looked like your girl to take the test.
Yeah, it was a beautiful idea. At the time, it worked beautifully.
Uh-huh.
We had a problem. She won the show, and she had to give back the money, and she got suspended.
Okay.
And I went off on this girl's manager because Listen, when you're living with a girl and you have a girlfriend, anybody messes with your girl, you got to stand up for her, right? I mean, come on. So I called up the manager, her manager, and I ripped him a new ass and was screaming and yelling at him. Like, you hypocrite. We're not doing a fraction of the drugs your girl does, blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
And I said, you know what? Fuck you and the horse you rode in on. I'm hung up on him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So 6 months later, I go on this casting call. I walk in. The guy goes, Rick Valenti. I go, yeah. He goes, you don't remember me, do you? I go, no. Last time I talked to you, you said, fuck you and the horse you rode in on, and you hung up on me. I said, dude, I'll walk out. I said, I'll leave. No. He goes, no, stay. Stay.
Yeah.
And he let me audition, and he gave me the job.
Really?
I'll ever be grateful for him because that job changed my life.
Yeah. So people that are young and don't remember, Body Shaping was a show that was on, and this was back in the 80s, and this was when bodybuilding was on TV all the time. So when ESPN started, they would have a lot of the big bodybuilding contests, like the Mr. Universe was on there, the Mr. Olympia was on there. They were covering all the shows, and they had a show on ESPN called Body Shaping where you and a couple of other people, but you were the main host, and you guys were
in. Kiana was.
Oh, yeah, Kiana Tom, yeah.
We had a great cast, John. I got to tell you, everybody chipped in and did what they did best. Kendall, he taught the step aerobics. Dr.
Right.
Kirk came up. You know, listen, John Triata, he owned the show, and he was brilliant. He had a great idea, and I learned a lot about camera angles, lighting, audio. And listen, we had a lot of girls come and go. When the camera comes on, you have to be a natural to talk and flirt with the camera and have fun. Because, you know, being in front of the camera yourself, a couple of seconds seem like eternity if you're not doing something correct. You know what I mean? So we learned a lot. There were no scripts. We had to write everything. And that's where all the training I did when I was a kid came into play because – you know, we'd say, okay, today's chest, and we'd have to give you three new chest movements. Well, you know, we could do that with our eyes closed, right?
Right.
So we did that. We had a great time, and we would go to the most beautiful resorts in the world, but it was in July when they weren't that busy, which meant it was the hottest time of the year, and we would do 5 shows a day, 100 shows in a row. See, nobody understood that.
Damn. Yeah.
So I learned a lot in the first 2 seasons because I would try to show up ripped. But when you did that, you know, by the second week, you were flat and injured. So you had to pace yourself and learn how to do it because I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how much you know about nutrition. When you're in Jamaica in July and you're in the sun from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. at night, you're going to get drained, sunburned, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And on ESPN, when we first started, we were on twice a day. Twice a day. It was an amazing run. We shot for 10 years. It ran for 16 years.
Damn, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, if we had Twitter and Instagram and all these things, man, oh, my God, it would have been crazy.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If you look back at that now, it was crazy that, I mean, just crazy how bodybuilding was so accepted back then. To have it was an hour-long show, right, on ESPN, and it was about training, you know, half hour. Okay. But it was about basically bodybuilding, and you were showing bodybuilding exercises.
And we had to teach the people. And you know what I noticed just the other day? We would show you how to stretch every muscle group between sets.
Yeah.
Nobody, I was looking just yesterday. It's funny we're talking about this. Training arms yesterday, I'm stretching my biceps out in between sets because I truly believe I get a better pump when I do that. And I'm trying triceps, and I'm putting my elbow over my head, straightening it out, stretching my tricep out, and I'm looking around. Nobody, not the professional bodybuilders, I don't see anybody stretch in between sets.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to stretching?
I remember Arnold used to do that a lot in between sets. Yeah. He used to talk about that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we, you know what we did, John? We had to educate the public on a safe routine with a safe eating plan. What's happening today is since everybody's got a channel to the world because of their phone and Instagram and whatever,
right?
Everybody's a guru and an expert. But when you really watch their videos, they're not educating the public. They're showing you a movement they think they look good in. But they're not telling you 3 to 4 sets, 8 to 15 reps, stretch in between sets, how many times a week, blah. They don't tell you any of this.
No, no.
Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at all these gurus out there and fitness experts, and I'm just scratching my head going, you're not educating us. All you're doing is showing us a movement you think you look good in.
Right.
So the
right.
whole thing is different now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I probably sound like a dinosaur, but you have to accept where it is and kind of just roll with it.
Yeah. What years did that show run, Rick?
We were there from 90 to 2000, and then they ran reruns, and it got off the air at 206.
Okay, 90. I thought it was in the 80s.
No, I think Corey had the show in 88 and 89.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I remember watching that in the wintertime in Chicago and seeing you on the beach with all these hot chicks, and I was like, man, this guy's got the life.
Oh, it was, man, I can't even tell you some of the stories.
Yeah.
I'll tell them in person, but it's not the type of thing. But anyway, it was fun. Listen, like I said, I'm forever grateful for the owner to the show, and the cast members were great. We're like family. I still talk to a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera guys, and it's like you become a family.
Yeah.
Because you guys are working your butt off. But we're shooting, you know, 5 shows a day. 5 half-hour shows a day.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work.
So did you stay out there all year, or was it just
No, we would go away twice a year for, you know, a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick, let me mention some of the guys, the top bodybuilders from that time. You could just tell me some stories and your thoughts on them. You mentioned Mike Mentzer. And now you met him in the early 80s, so this was kind of after Mike's career was over. But tell me a little bit about Mike. I never met him in person, and I've talked to guys like Dave Mastorakis and Samir, and they said he was really a great guy.
He really was a great guy and very smart, very smart. In fact, he was one of the only bodybuilders who got a perfect 300 score.
Right, at the universe.
Yep. He had a training philosophy where you would do one set to failure. It was intense, and you had to have... You know, you had to put your big boy pants on if you were going to jump in and train with Mike. Yeah, I'm telling you. So, like, the intensity level was amazing. But if you got to know him, he was funny and very smart. If you ever asked him a question, if he didn't know the answer right away, he would research and come back with you and help you. I mean, that's what I miss about back then. We all helped each other.
Yeah.
We hung around. We went to the beach together, and we hung out, got ready for shows, helped each other out backstage. Now it seems like the guys don't even like each other. They all come in the gym, hoods on and headsets on.
Right,
they don't talk to anybody.
No.
Yeah, everybody's angry. I'm like, what's up? What's going on? We had fun. Well, I mean, I can't even tell you. Listen, I got to train a lot and hang around with so many of these incredible bodybuilders and developed friendships with them where we would go out together at night. I mean, Mike Christian and I hung around a lot together. We would go out to clubs. It was amazing. It was so much fun.
What was Mike Mentzer's physique like when you saw him?
Mike Mentzer was still thick as hell and had a balanced physique, beautiful calves, beautiful legs.
Yeah.
Strong as a bull. Yeah. Mike was one of a kind. There's very, you know, every now and then there's a certain bodybuilder that's just one of a kind. We all have, you know, our body parts we might be known for. Mm-hmm. But, you know, guys like Danny Padilla, he's balanced. Guys like Bob Paris was balanced. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, and this is all opinion. Listen, everybody's got an opinion. You're not going to get everybody to agree with
you. Right.
The thing about bodybuilding, listen, it's what your preference is.
Yeah.
So, you know, some guys like Franco's body, some guys like Arnold's body.
Yeah. And the physiques were also individual back then. They all had their own characteristics. Yeah.
They were individuals back then, too. In the 80s, a lot of guys were very close, and I think that's what made the competition so great.
Mm-hmm. What was Casey like to see working out? I just did an interview with Larry Jackson. And he said Casey would destroy the Mentzer brothers in their workout.
Casey was strong as a bull. That's the beauty of it all back then. We had so many alpha males in one room at the same time.
Yeah.
I can't blame the energy. It was insane.
Yeah.
I mean, the hair on the back of your neck would stand up, and you would train 10 times harder because you believed you were an alpha male too.
Right.
We were all curling 100-pound dumbbells. That was nothing. But what we did after that, we cut the weight in half and double the reps. Mm. And then you cut the weight in half again and double the reps again. That's a breakdown. Nobody does that anymore either.
Yeah. What was Tom like? You mentioned Tom a little bit with his squatting and stuff. Now, when you saw him squat, would he go heavy sometimes, or would he always do like 315 for like an incredible
amount? No, Tom would go heavy. Tom would go heavy too. But, you know, Tom put that training in everybody part he trained.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, everybody part. So, I mean, there were times where you had to like check yourself, check your mind. And, you know, if you were doing 50 reps, you had to actually start. What I used to do was count backwards. It was like going downhill.
You're right, right.
And it's psychologically, it's easier. But you'd be surprised how many reps you could get if you really put your mind into it. A lot of people think, well, 20, maybe 25. No, you could double that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you're hitting the muscle from a different angle. And also fast twitch, slow twitch. You're really mixing it up. If you always go heavy with low reps, it's pretty inevitable you're going to get injured.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we all love to train heavy. I did too. But I tore my hamstring and I tore my pec. I'm supposed to have neck surgery. So I try to tell all the young kids, just please try and cycle your training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom is doing squat seminars now. And I guess he's really popular with them. But I seen a couple clips of him. He was doing with that old school labs that I'm working with. And it's funny because he's showing these people how to squat. And they're using a weight they can only do like maybe 8 or 10 reps. And when they get to the 8th or 10 rep, he screams at them, 5 more. And then they do 5 more. And then he screams at them again, 5 more. And then they do 5. And they end up doing like 20 more reps than they thought they could, you know?
Exactly. And that's amazing to yourself because you go, wow.
Yeah, you didn't know you had an injury.
Yes, exactly. And that's the beauty of being around those kind of guys. There's not a lot of them left.
Yeah, I know. Talk about Robbie, because I know you're good friends with Robbie. And of course, when I was a kid, I grew up watching Robbie compete. And I saw him like in 1976, 77 in the magazines. I remember I got into bodybuilding in 77, and I was every month in Muscle Builder. I was like, holy shit, this guy looks unbelievable. He was getting bigger and more ripped every month. And now here we are 40 years later, and the guy's still in the gym hitting it hard at 71 years old.
Yep, strong as a bull. And I'll tell you what, shredded. At 71 years old, shredded.
Unbelievable.
Robbie is a unique character, has a beautiful physique. If you're lucky enough to get in the inner circle, he's funny. I mean, I love Robbie. I got the honor of putting together some posing routines with music. We mixed some James Brown music together.
Oh, really?
He tore the house down. You know, the other thing that seems to be lacking is the posing routines. When I competed back in the day, your posing routine was just as important as your conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But today it seems like it's an afterthought.
Yeah.
They come out. I went to the Olympia in Vegas. I think it was two years ago, maybe three. And Jim Mannion gave me some great seats. I've known Jimmy for years. I love Jimmy. And I was sitting there watching these guys. I mean, they would come out on stage before they hit a pose. They would put their hand up to their ear and like command an applause. And I'm sitting there going, tear down the house with your routine and we'll give you a standing ovation, but I'm not going to clap because you walked on stage.
Right.
Yeah. And then you watch the routine. You could tell all they had was front double bicep, back double bicep, lat spread. There was no artistic poses. And I was sitting there thinking, what happened to the art of posing?
Right.
We would go into the posing room with a stopwatch. And I did this with Mike Quinn, Robbie, all kinds of people.
Okay.
And we would go through every mandatory pose and hold it as long as you can. I mean, a minute, 2 minutes, a long time. What happened then is you would know when you got on stage, you would be the first one into the pose and the last one out, and you wouldn't be shaking and everything else that you see people doing because you conditioned yourself.
Right.
To get on stage and hit every mandatory pose perfect. You knew exactly where to get, how to stand, everything.
Right.
I'm watching these guys pose in the back mirror the other day, and they're shaking. And I'm thinking, I just don't understand why they're not working on that. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't get it. I mean, and especially with social media now, I mean, can you imagine if you created a great routine? how that would just be shared all over the place, and you would
your
standing in the industry would go up so much.
That's right, and I don't understand why they don't put the work and the time into it, because I got to tell you, when you put together a really good routine, it feels amazing, and you tear the house down. And the thing is, John, you know what's amazing, John? It's like the ordinary public who aren't into bodybuilding would look at that and go, that's entertaining.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it is entertaining. You're mixing music, and you're hitting the poses on the break, and you're – look at Bob Paris, look at Frank Zane, look at Lee LeBrad. I mean, all these guys. Lee Haney was a good poser. I mean, and they all hit the breaks. They hit the poses on the breaks. And I just don't see a lot of people doing that anymore.
Yeah, I talked to Charles Gaines last year, the guy who wrote Pumping Iron. And, of course, Charles comes from a whole other world. He's an accomplished writer, and, he hung out with a whole different cultural crowd than most bodybuilders did. And he took Kurt Vonnegut and his wife to a bodybuilding show. They didn't know anything about bodybuilding. And Ed Corney was there, and Ed posed. And he said, Kurt Vonnegut was fascinated. He was like, wow, that's amazing. So that just goes to show you how bodybuilding can transcend outside of our sport into the general public.
Well, if you have a body that is pleasing to the eyes, in other words, you have a small waist, beautiful, full, round muscles, small joints, and all of a sudden you're hitting poses that look amazing because of your body type and the music is right, it's really an entertaining show.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you worked with a lot of guys on the routine, right? You worked with Mike Quinn and Phil Williams.
Yeah. Yep. You know, I had a real passion for that, and I still do. It's just a lot of the guys don't want to put the time in. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah. When you were working with Mike, this was back in the 80s, so this was when we still had the cassette tapes, right? So that had to be hard. Did you go to a DJ or something to do that professionally?
Yeah. You know, no matter what you're doing, if you really want to do it, you'll find a way. And if you don't, you'll find an excuse.
Yeah.
And I learned that a long time ago. So Mike, he had a aggressive physique. So we used the Gap Band. I mean, we mixed a few different songs, and they all fit his personality and his physique. And Mike tore down he would tear the house down.
Yeah, yeah. I remember his routine from the 1988 Olympia, and it was so cool how he had all those different songs in there.
Yes. I love that. It's entertaining.
Hey, Rick, talk about the Barbarian Brothers, because you saw those guys when they were probably at their peak, and I never got to see the Barbarian Brothers, but of course I heard stories about them. So tell me what it was like to train in the gym with them.
The Barbarian Brothers were ahead of their time. They were so unique, so strong, and yet they were very talented. I mean, David is a really talented dude. I mean, he could do a lot of things. I mean, you know, but back then you have to understand that they were all about size and strength. And like I said, they were doing reverse bench press with ridiculous amounts of weight.
Yeah. You know?
I don't know if you ever tried a reverse bench press.
I can't do it. I've tried it. I can't really do it.
My shoulders and pecs never felt right doing it that way. But
yeah, me neither.
They were also strong with the dumbbells. And I mean, they were cool guys. Listen, it was – Gold's Gym back then was a circus, okay? You'd walk in and you had these guys in jeans, work boots, and a flannel shirt, okay? That's usually what they trained in.
Right.
They were great. I love them, man. I thought they were just cool, funny. They did movies together. I mean, they did a lot of stuff.
Yeah. How was the atmosphere in the gym, Rick? I mean, I know I trained in gyms in the 80s, and it was very hardcore. I think just about almost all the bodybuilding gyms in the 80s, no matter where you were in the country, I think they were all hardcore. Everybody trained hard. But being at Gold's, I mean, how was that then compared to now? I mean, it's obviously got to be so
completely different now. I mean, you have to understand, back then the owners were there too. So, I mean, everything had a reason and a purpose and the marketing strategy. Now it's corporate.
Yeah, now it's all corporate.
It's a whole different game. And back then it was all bodybuilders, and now it's all trainers. You know, there's very few pros there. I mean, if you're lucky, you'll see Dexter. You know, there's a half dozen pros who come in there now. But you have to also remember, back then, John, it was a lot harder to get a pro card.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, now everybody's a pro.
Yeah.
But the intensity, John, it's hard to put into words. Because you had to be there because you could feel it. I mean, you could just feel, you know, it's like going to a boxing. Like, I used to go to fights with Gregory Hines, see Mike Tyson in Vegas. The energy in the room when Mike came walking out, I mean, he'd wear a ripped towel, no socks, and come out, and he would literally be growling and moving his head side to side. And then when he got in the center of the ring, he would stare at the dude, and you could tell the other guys looking at the floor. He didn't even want to look at Mike.
Right, right.
You know, that's the other thing about Gold's Gym. I've developed so many friends that I idolized as a kid. Jimmy Kahn. I mean, Ray Liotta, Gregory Hines. I trained Gregory for the movie Tap. I went to Jelly's Last Jam. I trained him then. It was on Broadway. Gregory Hines was a talented, talented guy, but he was such a sweetheart. I mean, everybody loved Gregory, and he loved bodybuilding. He really
did. He loved bodybuilding, yeah.
He would go to all the shows. And,
Gregory,
he was a special guy. He really was. So the friendships I developed at Gold's with all these actors and athletes, and Michael Jordan would come in when they were in town, all the wrestlers. You know, Rich Menzner was friends with a lot of these wrestlers. So when they all came into town, they got to train at Gold's for free. And it was you know, seeing Hulk Hogan there. I mean, it was totally different.
And another thing, too, that's so different is now the magazines are pretty much gone. But back then, the only way you could get any publicity was to be in the magazines. And they were doing most of the photo shoots at Gold's, right? So everybody was going to Gold's for the photo shoots. Yeah,
that's right. We had Magic Schwartz, he would come in and film a lot of the stuff. So he's got some incredible footage of.
Yeah, I've seen some of his stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wish we had more cameras back then because there's so many things we didn't get to document, you know?
Yeah.
Just hearsay. So, you know, that's why I'm writing a book right now, John, because when you get to the age of 60, you start to realize the reality of life because. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to take care of your parents, and then you had to bury your parents. Life is a little different when you bury your parents. You know, Mother's Day is a little hard. Father's Day is a little hard. Birthdays, Christmases. So I realized that if you don't tell your story through your eyes, it never happened. All you have is opinion of others. So I wasn't going to let that happen. When my brother was killed and my mom and dad died and two of my best friends, I just said, you know what, I'm going to honor them. I'm going to write this book for them. And I'm going to do a book which is more, for me, it was a gratitude book. I want to thank people who helped me. Sure, I accomplished much more than I ever thought I would coming from Ansonia, Connecticut. But I wanted to thank the people who helped me get there.
Yeah.
And then the last chapter I'm putting together is about taking care of your parents. And listen, you have to have a list of things. You're lucky. Your parents are still alive, John, so you're blessed.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the conversation that a lot of people need to have with their parents is, listen, is there a will? Is there a power? Who's the power of attorney? Who's going to make medical decisions when they need to be made? Do you have all the bank accounts with the passwords somewhere? You need to have the house and everything you own in a trust.
Yeah.
There's a list of 5 to 10 things that you really need to try to take care of before you bury your parents. I learned that hard way because when my parents went, it was jump ball. Okay. I had none of those things. So, you know, I'm in a place now where I'm so grateful just to wake up and have enthusiasm for life.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people probably are listening to me thinking, man, he's been in LA too long. But the real goal for me now is, are you happy?
Yeah.
And if you're not, read some books. They give you tools to deal with whatever comes into your life. And I've learned that. I've learned that no matter what comes into your life, it's how you respond to it that is the most important thing. And so when you deal with adversity, you got to stay positive. And we're all, listen, here's the deal with life. We're born and we all die. We all go.
Yeah.
So when you start to really understand that, when you're young, you don't even think about it. But when you get older, you start to think about it. So it makes every day a little more appreciative. You're grateful to be. I'm so excited just to go to the gym and train and do what I do. I love my life. I'm having a great time. I'm probably mentally in the best place I've ever been because I understand the connection between mind, body, spirit. I see a lot of people out there, John, who are in great shape, who walk around angry as hell. So I look at them and I go, you have a beautiful body. You're in great shape. Why are you so angry? You know, they don't understand it. And the thing is, you have to fire on all cylinders. You have to understand that there is a spiritual connection. There's got to be more than this.
Yeah.
You know? And if money is your God, you'll never be happy.
Yeah.
Or a lot of people only do things for the money. I learned, for me, life is made up of chapters. I truly believe every 15 years or so, you got to reinvent yourself.
Hmm.
And if you could find another passion, you're really lucky.
Yeah.
Because it's passion that makes you truly happy. When
right.
you're working
right.
on a project that really makes you smile, and it's the last thing you do at night and the first thing you do in the morning, that's the sweet spot for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always looking for new passion. Listen, bodybuilding was such a huge part of my life. I've played in photography. I've done documentaries, and I've done all these different things. I'm still looking for that next sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the beauty of it. Every day you wake up, you can explore new things.
Yeah. Well, it seems like that wisdom, too, comes with age, too, because I remember, you know, even myself being younger, and you're in this amazing shape. And you just don't really appreciate it because you don't
That's
realize
right.
that it's going to go one day. You know, you're not going
right.
to have that body anymore. And
right.
you do take things for granted because we just don't know. You know, when we're younger, we don't understand.
Listen, when I was in my prime in 85 and 86, I was traveling mm-hmm. every weekend. I was doing car shows with wrestlers, doing appearances. I was doing gym seminars, doing openings, Gold's Gym openings for Ric Flair. I mean, I was all over the world, going to Italy, you name it, Germany, Sweden, everywhere. And sometimes I wasn't living in the moment. I would be flying on a private jet going to Bali, thinking about the party in Vegas I'm missing.
Yeah.
So I think the more you're on point, and this is just my opinion, the more you live in the moment.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
no matter where you are, there you are. Enjoy it.
Right. Yeah.
For me, I really like to be around happy, positive people
mm-hmm.
because the more books I read about self-help, spirituality, and all this stuff, when you really read, I read more books now than I've ever read in my life. When I went to high school, it wasn't cool to be smart. I mean, you know.
Right.
So the reason I talk about this is because it keeps me on point. When I open a conversation with somebody and I say, "How you doing?" and they go, same old shit, just another day. It's like, ah, you know, I can't stand that. Get away
yeah.
from me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you said, usually you don't think this way until you get a little older. You're still young. You're younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
But you're doing really good. And I told you, I have much respect for you because I see how hard you're really working. You know, a lot of people don't understand it, but you're flying all around the country, doing these interviews, working for this company, working for that company.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick. And I can attest that you read because I gave you my book, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, and I think you read it in like 2 days.
Oh, yeah. I love you. Listen, you did a great job with that book. I tell you what, I tell everybody, if you've got, whether it's a young kid or a middle-aged kid or even an older guy, buy the book. Because
yeah,
you broke it down in such simple terms to understand how to train, how to eat. I mean, that's important.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
what I don't understand is I see all these pro bodybuilders. They all have trainers now.
I know.
Wait a minute. I'm confused here. If bodybuilding is your passion and you've been doing it your whole life.
Right.
I don't understand. I don't understand.
And there were so many bodybuilders back in the day that didn't have trainers. You know, Lee Haney didn't
Rich
Kaspari. None of you did. Right?
No, we all trained together.
Right.
We didn't have trainers. I mean, I don't know. Listen, Lou Ferrigno was there. Samir has probably one of the most beautiful symmetrical physiques. You ever look at his back double bicep when he was really...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an amazing time. And now I'm at the age where I get it. So I'm like, I'm in the fourth quarter of my life. Give me the ball. I want to be in control.
Yeah.
So that's the way I'm thinking. You know, every other people, they want to play victim and complain. I can't be around that.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right on. I mean, you got to find your passion and you got to find what makes you happy and you have to appreciate life. I mean, I think that comes with age too. You know, like you said, after you lose your parents and you lose, you know, like you said, you lost your brother and a couple of good friends, it really makes you appreciate life and what you have.
Absolutely. And you want to be the positive energy in the room. You have to understand, you're responsible for the energy you bring in the room. A lot of people don't even think about that. They walk in, they're going to complain about the politics. It's just like you're a vampire. You're stuck in the energy out of the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's much more fun to be the positive guy, isn't it? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's one thing I always liked about Arnold. Arnold was always one of my favorites. Not just my favorite physique, but just his attitude and how he was always so positive. And I read stories about when he was on movie sets, he felt like he was responsible for everybody, for the atmosphere there, you know. And he would come onto the set, and he would be very positive and very energetic, and he would try to make everybody feel comfortable. And,
well,
you know, he just wanted to keep things positive.
I don't even think Arnold realizes how he's inspiring us now in a different way.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who had surgery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And after the surgery, a couple weeks later, he's back in the gym working out.
Yeah.
You know, listen, I take my hat off to Arnold. You know, he is inspiring me now in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at some of these guys in the gym, Eddie Giuliani, some of these old-timers who are now in their 80s.
Yeah.
And I look at them and I tell them, I say, listen, I just told Chuck Mahoney this yesterday. I said, dude, he's like in his 80s. I said, Chuck, you inspire me every day. And he was looking at me like I'm crazy. I said, no, I'm serious. He goes, thank you very much. You made my day. I said, no, I'm just being honest with you. Mm-hmm. I see you here every day working out, and you're in your 80s. And, you know, Robbie, you have to take your head off to Robbie.
Oh, yeah. Robbie's unbelievable.
I mean, Robbie eats so clean religiously ever since I've known him. I told you I took him out for his birthday once. I had a cake come with a candle. He wouldn't eat it. I said, it's your birthday. You know? So, listen, I love Robbie. He's shredded. But you have to understand, if you really want to be shredded, you've got to do what it takes.
Yeah.
And it's about eating clean. I eat clean, too. But I'm Italian. My mother ruined us because she cooked meat. So once a week, I've got to eat, you know.
Yeah.
I got to have some spaghetti, bolognese, maybe a piece of cheesecake or a cannoli. I still got to enjoy things of life,
right,
you know.
Right, right. And that's one of the things I loved about Gold's when I went there. I hadn't been there in a while. And when I went there about a month ago, it was really cool seeing all those old school guys still there, you know, like Eddie Giuliani and. I saw Larry Jackson in the morning and Charles Glass. And
Larry Jackson used to have a latch grid that was amazing.
Yeah.
He was always in shape. I love Larry. Great guy.
Yeah, yeah. But it's cool seeing, you know, of course, Robbie, all those guys that were. And it seems like the people at Gold's, even though maybe some of the younger guys don't know who they are, but the people that do know who they are, we still respect those guys for
Absolutely.
Still being in the gym. Yeah.
We
respect the history of the sport.
Yes, yes. And, you know, like I said, as we get older, they're now motivating and inspiring us in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So that's what life's about. Listen, and you're doing that, helping other people, and that's what it's all about. You have to learn that it feels good to help other people out.
Right.
So whether it be you helping, educating people on the sport and maybe the history, or you're helping people out with doing the books that you've done, that feels good. Now, listen, if you make money, that's icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't in a long time a project just for the money.
Yeah.
You know, listen, I kind of retired after the Body Shaping show because I did what you did. Every weekend, I was in a different state. I was traveling so much, I didn't even know what day it was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I got lucky. I made a little bit of money. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take a little break. And what I've learned is everybody thinks when you retire, it's going to be this amazing journey. Well, let me tell you, everybody else you know is working. So
right.
When you retire,
you
can only lay in the sun so much. You can only, you know, do whatever it is you do. That's why I'm back out there now. And with this book, Body Shaping is about to release 800 shows on Amazon and also in Walmart. That's what I've been told.
Wow.
And that'll be a great PR thing for myself.
Yeah.
So I'm slowly, most of my stuff is still private because I'm not so into the Instagram stuff, but I'm learning that you kind of have to open everything up. In today's world, if you want to pitch something to a company,
yeah,
their first question is, how many followers do you have?
Yeah, that's where it's all at now. Yeah.
I understand that, and I'm going to open up everything very soon. But in the meantime, I'm just having a great time. I'm loving life, and I'm enjoying, you know, seeing guys like you, Rick Drayson, and guys like that who are doing things mm-hmm. for the history of the sport.
Yeah. When does your book come out, Rick?
I'm hoping by the end of this year or the beginning of next year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting book. It's not going to be your typical fitness guy book.
Yeah, yeah, more about your life.
Yeah, my life, and, you know, there's a lot of twists and turns, and it's going to be interesting. Listen, I'm doing it, like I said, to honor my parents and tell my story through my eyes, and I understand not everybody's going to like it, and I understand you're going to have people who like you, and you're going to have people who don't like you. Mm-hmm. If you don't have any haters, John, you didn't do anything.
Right.
Okay? Some
right.
people just are not going to like you just because you're doing shit they wish they could have done.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
And you just have to have thick skin and keep on moving forward.
Right. Well, Rick, I want to thank you for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I got a chance to talk to you when I was out in California a month ago, and I'm glad we had you on the show. And I hope I can bring you back again so we can talk about some more stories about a Gold's Gym.
Anytime, John, it's an honor, and I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
All right, buddy. All right, thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank again Rick Valente for joining us on the podcast. That was a really great interview, and we hope to have Rick on again. I want to thank our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And 4th of July is coming up, so everybody have a great 4th of July. Have a safe holiday. And we will see you guys next week. Take care, everybody.